kids are headed back to school in Wisconsin in the coming weeks, if they're not back already. And we're paying a visit now to an often overlooked part of the school experience, the cafeteria. What's served in schools in Wisconsin, where it comes from, why access to good nutrition is not always equal, the workforce behind school lunches, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up eating school lunches? What differences do you see from when you were growing up and what your kids might see today? Do your kids eat school lunches or bring their own to school? Have you ever worked in the school cafeteria? Love to hear about your experience. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer Gaddis is an associate professor of civil society and community studies at UW-Madison, and she sits on the advisory board of the National Farm to School Network. She's the author of the book, The Labor of Lunch, Why We Need Real Food and Real Jobs in American Public Schools. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
We've talked in the past, Jennifer, a little bit about kind of an unplanned experiment with school lunches that came about because of the pandemic. What kind of things have changed? What kind of things do you think we've learned from the pandemic era and how we changed our school lunch programs?
Yeah, I think that one thing that was really huge during the pandemic era is that we had this really wonderful experiment nationwide where we were able to offer free school breakfasts and lunches to all children, regardless of their household income. And that's something that from the very, very beginning of school lunch programs in the United States, dating back over 100 years, had been a dream of a lot of the people who created these programs. And the pandemic is something that really made it both politically and logistically possible for about 2 years. Since then, basically starting the last school year, families across Wisconsin, for the most part, have experienced a return to the pre-pandemic model where students pay for school lunch based on their family income. So for example, a family of four earning $39,000 or less in Wisconsin would qualify for free meals. Those in a family of four earning between $39,000 and $1 and $55,500 would qualify for reduced price meals, which cost 40 cents for lunch. But everyone else would fall into this paid category where the local school district or private school that's participating in the National School Breakfast and Lunch Program sets the particular prices at the local level. So we've kind of gone back to that old model in most all schools across the state of Wisconsin. But there's a lot of momentum nationwide to get the old model from the pandemic of free school meals for all back. In fact, eight states, including a few of our neighbors, Minnesota and Michigan, and actually Illinois is poised to be the ninth state, have passed state-level legislation that will guarantee students free school breakfasts and lunches into the future. So I think that it's something that has really sparked a national conversation and movement about why is it that school meals seem to be the only thing in schools that we actually treat as something that parents and caregivers should be paying for separately and differently based on their economic station. You know, you don't do that for bus rides, you don't do that for gym class, for English, for math. So it's sort of a weird exception. And I think that there's this growing movement now to really see school meals and nutrition as a necessary material resource for all students to really excel academically and just thrive in terms of mental and emotional and physical well-being. So I think it's kind of opened up a new conversation about what school meals are for and how they should be funded.
And you are working, I understand, on a study about how parents and caregivers feel about school lunches, because finances aren't the only factor. In some cases, you know, parents, even with free school lunch, don't go with it. What kind of things are you hoping to find out?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. So in some of the states that have begun to offer free school meals for all, and even in some of the districts in Wisconsin that offer free school meals for all through something called the community eligibility provision, we sometimes see that participation rates, you know, hover around 60 to 70%. And so it kind of begs this question of what else is going on. And on the one hand, I think that there are some issues with people maybe having misperceptions about meal quality. So I think, for example, I went to school in the 1990s. School meals are very different today than what they looked like when I was a kid. A lot of research studies actually show that school meals are the healthiest food that students actually consume. and even healthier on average than what parents or caregivers might be packing as part of a home lunch. So I think that there are some misperceptions about the nutritional quality of school meals. And I think also in some schools where they're not doing a lot of fresh preparation, which we often refer to as scratch cooking, I think that there's some concerns about food quality as well. And some of those things, I think, you know, can vary from school to school or even district to district in terms of, you know, how much the perception really matches reality. I think that there are a lot of places across the state of Wisconsin and nationally that have been doing really phenomenal work trying to transition to more scratch cooking and doing a lot of what we call farm to school, which means sourcing more food from local Wisconsin farmers and other producers, and also providing more educational opportunities for students around the food. So I think that there's a lot of things that have changed that parents might not be necessarily aware of, but I think that there's also still some struggles. So for example, you know, thinking about an elementary student, if they see that, for example, it's supposed to be grilled cheese and tomato soup on a particular day, and then the school has to do some sort of menu substitution, and then the child arrives and, you know, what they decided they were going to eat for lunch that day isn't on offer, and it's something that they don't like or don't feel comfortable eating. And so then they maybe decide not to eat school lunch that day. And then they come home, they tell their parent or their caregiver, you know, that they went hungry that day. That can be something that would make a parent feel, you know, guilty or worried or concerned that their child isn't necessarily being taken care of. So I think that there's definitely some issues in terms of just, you know, people really wanting the best for their kids, and a lot of trust that goes into really letting somebody else take on that role of feeding your child. But I will say, from my experience in school cafeterias across the state and really getting to know a lot of the really wonderful people who work in school nutrition programs, that they really, really care about the kids. And I think that the workers across the state would love nothing more than to be able to feed all students across the state free of charge and to have the resources that they need to produce fresh meals that students are really happy to eat and that parents feel really excited about their kids eating.
We're talking about school lunch and back to school season. Our guest is Jennifer Gaddis. She's from UW-Madison and author of the book, The Labor of Lunch, Why We Need Real Food and Real Jobs in American Public Schools. Coming up, we'll look at who's making and serving these lunches, the conditions they work in, what they get paid. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever worked in a school cafeteria, maybe as a nutritionist, a cook, a part-time worker? Are you doing it? Are you gearing up to do it right now? Love to hear what you've experienced there, what you think maybe should change, what you wish people knew about that job. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with UW-Madison professor Jennifer Gaddis, author of the book, The Labor of Lunch, Why We Need Real Food and Real Jobs in American Public Schools. We're talking about school lunches and school cafeterias in the back-to-school season. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about policies, the projects that go into school lunches? Do you want to share your experience as a parent, a student, somebody working to provide these lunches, or maybe a farmer supplying schools? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jennifer, let's talk about who is making these lunches. You've done a lot of research, including some out earlier this year, on things like pay for school lunch workers, school cafeteria workers. What kind of things did you find out?
Yeah, so we did a study that included about 25% of schools across the state of Wisconsin. And what we found out was that part-time workers make up the backbone of school nutrition programs across the state. 4 out of 5 non-managerial employees work part-time hours. And most of those jobs are what we would consider to be poverty wage or low wage jobs. But there has been some increase in terms of what wages look like, particularly in this last kind of 2 years as schools have been transitioning back to in-person schooling and to this new Real competitive, you know, marketplace for different kinds of employees. But we have definitely found that there's a pretty significant wage gap between people who work in cafeterias and kitchens in our elementary and secondary schools versus, for example, retirement and assisted living or medical facilities such as hospitals, even though a lot of the work is actually quite similar. And I think one thing people don't necessarily understand about school nutrition workers is that they're not only preparing and serving food, but they also have to understand a lot of different regulations coming not only from the federal government, but also from state and also like from the county and even local district wellness policies. They have a lot of things that they have to kind of keep in their minds in terms of different paperwork and requirements. They have to be able to follow food safety protocols, accommodate special diets, and they also have at least 4 and up to 12 hours of continuing education that they have to do every year to satisfy the federal government's professional standards. So there's a lot that goes into the work that I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize. So part of the challenge, I think, is to help people understand that this is a profession that deserves respect and that people oftentimes are actually taking a pretty big hit to their annual take-home pay just because they really care about the kids that they're feeding and want to work in a school setting. Another thing that we found was that this is a very gendered workforce. So over 90% of the workers in school nutrition programs in the state of Wisconsin are women. And if we look, for example, at the difference in pay between school nutrition workers and custodial workers, who most often are men, there's a pretty significant difference in hourly pay. So I think for a variety of reasons, a number of school districts across the state are really trying to do what they can to increase workers' wages, because if school nutrition programs can't actually recruit and retain enough employees, that has a really big impact on the quality of the food and the quality of the experience for the students that they're serving.
And looking at
so
that report,
I think that
Jennifer,
there is...
I want to key in on that turnover issue, that report. You talked to a lot of supervisors. They said, yeah, I lost 4 or 5 out of my 10 staff this year. This is a problem.
Yeah, and I think that school nutrition employees usually are the lowest paid or tied for lowest paid in a school system. So one thing that a number of the directors and managers that we spoke with for this report would say is that it almost seems as if people from other departments in the school are actually coming and poaching workers from my department to serve as like paraprofessionals, for example, or student aides. And so it can be really difficult for them to not only be competing with private sector jobs, but also to be actually retaining their employees even within the school system. So it's definitely something that I think is a big issue. And another thing that we found was that a lot of the workers in school nutrition programs on the money that they take home, they really can't even afford housing. So a lot of employees actually have 2 or even 3 jobs. And that's something that I think is really exacerbated by the fact that most schools have their employees in 9-month contracts. So it means that not only are you having part-time hours at low pay, but also you don't necessarily have guaranteed work during the summer. So it can be something that is very challenging in terms of school districts really being able to make sure that they have the staffing that they need. So that's one reason why in some of the states that have passed what's called Healthy School Meals for All legislation, they've actually included provisions to really direct additional money towards workers' wages and compensation, as well as workforce development to make sure that people are trained to do fresh cooking and to use more local products.
Let's bring on a caller. Liz is with us in Lyons. Liz, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Liz?
So I worked in Georgia as an S&P for 5 years, and it was during the time that Michelle Obama had started the My Plate initiative with the fresh foods coming in. I liked it because it helped the farmers bring in more products to us. But it also, I worked in poverty level elementary and middle schools. We also had to teach classes to these children about what these fruits and vegetables are, how much you should eat, the My Plate situation and everything, because they had no idea. They had never seen certain fruits or vegetables before when we would put them out on the line. And so they wouldn't take them. So then we would have to turn around and do a class and teach them what it was, how much you should eat, and what, you know, what was good for them.
Liz, interesting perspective. Jennifer, in just our last minute or so, when we make a change in our nutrition programs, how to bring the kids themselves on board?
Well, I think that definitely that education piece is a big one, but also I think that giving the opportunity for students to have more input in designing menus is a really great strategy. So for example, in Madison, where I am at East High School last school year, one of the culinary classes actually worked with their teacher and with the school district to develop some new recipes that they taste tested with, you know, students in their high school. And then the recipes that were most popular were actually integrated into the regular school cycle menu. So I think that definitely the educational piece is important, but also really making these programs more participatory and giving students more voice, and certainly saying that things need to be healthy and to meet nutritional standards, but there's a lot of different forms of healthy food, right? And there's a lot of ways that students might be able to get input in terms of what they would really like to see. And for the most part, with the work that I've done in school districts across the state, we really hear the same thing time and time again, that students just want to have fresher, higher quality food. So there's certain things that I think are definitely popular in schools that we don't necessarily need to change, but it's more about making sure that the food is a little bit fresher when it's served, and that students do have access to things that are reflective of their cultures and what they're eating at home as well.
Liz, thanks for the call. And Jennifer, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's Jennifer Gaddis, Associate Professor of Civil Society and Community Studies at UW-Madison. Jennifer sits on the advisory board of the National Farm to School Network, and she's the author of The Labor of Lunch, Why We Need Real Food and Real Jobs in American Public Schools. She joins us for a behind-the-scenes look at school lunch programs.